Gildan Media presents Your Coach in a Box. Affordable, mind-enriching programs. Gildan Media presents an unabridged recording of The Secret Language of Spirit, Understanding Spirit Communication in Our Everyday Lives by William Stillman, narrated by Sean Pratt. The following dedication appears in the book for Justin, who is passionate about making the world a better place. Introduction. Many of us studied a foreign language in school. Perhaps it was Spanish, German, or French. By speaking a new language, we may identify the differences between it and our native language, including nuances in translation that don't quite match up. For example, the Italian word zitto, or be quiet, can be interpreted as the coarser shut up in English. The many meanings for the Hawaiian aloha include not only hello and goodbye, but compassion, peace, and affection. The majority of us probably learned another language for the duration we were enrolled in a class and then allowed our use of it to lapse. As the saying goes, if you don't use it, you lose it. But the more you do use it, the more proficient you become. This is how those who are employed as teachers, linguists, and interpreters, including those who interpret sign language, make it look so facile. Speaking the alternative language has become second nature. I've come to the conclusion that I am, myself, a linguist of sorts. As a psychic medium, I don't have a normal life or a regular job. In fact, my job is also to effectively interpret a foreign language, one in which I've become reasonably fluent. It is the language of spirit. It is one of symbols and sensations, icons and emotions. I translate these impressions into words for those not yet as fluent as I am. By immersing myself in the culture of the language, I've acquired a cultural competency. Thus, my spirituality is not a mindset, it is a lifestyle. I am speaking, thinking, and breathing this competency, which, in turn, complements a lifestyle that honors the culture. It is akin to becoming a first-time father. A good parent dispenses with self-centeredness in favor of making his child the priority. In my case, the child is my higher self. The benefit has been a greater knowledge and a heightened awareness of the spirit realm. This comfort level has granted me tenure, yielding me confidence to represent this realm as an interpreter with reasonable authority. As with any translation, some of it may be open to interpretation or personal preference. Ascertaining the proper terms that align with my own language can cause minor discrepancies, and subtleties may get lost in translation. For example, I was once asked by a woman from China to connect with her deceased brother. I was repeatedly drawn to the word murder, but she didn't understand this. I finally asked her how he passed, and she replied that he had been hit by a car. I don't know if her brother's tragedy was accidental or deliberate, but the variation in semantics was interesting. In essence, I was being shown that he died violently, not of his own volition, and not from natural causes. Once the woman and I could agree on the generality of the translation, the rest of the reading flowed smoothly. The closest approximation I can fathom for expressing how I interact with the spirit realm is to think of it as a celestial version of charades. If you recall playing charades, you'll remember that the object is to convey to others, without speaking, a hidden meaning known only to you. There are some standard charades cues, such as pressing together both palms and opening them simultaneously to represent book, or cranking an imaginary camera for movie. If the hidden meaning is three words, you hold up three fingers. You fold down one finger to show two to isolate the second word. If one word rhymes with another, you can tug an ear as a clue to indicate sounds like. This analogy perfectly describes my daily routine, continuously engaged in a celestial version of charades for advanced players. The language I translate is fascinating and intriguing to me personally. I have long held an interest in the unusual and the unexplained. This interest was indulged and encouraged as I was growing up, so it comes as no surprise to me that I have composed a book about it. Here I wish to share what I have gleaned from my years of interacting with spirit, the compassion, the wisdom, and the beauty of its mysterious ways. Our everyday lives are teeming with information embedded throughout in the cryptic manner of charades. It is, in essence, hidden in plain sight. Unfortunately, much of that information has the potential to be disregarded or overlooked for being a secret language. My hope is that this book will provide the tools for decoding spiritual hieroglyphics, as well as to offer insight about why spirit desires to maintain open channels of communication with us all. Chapter 1. Understanding Heaven. In order to grasp the concept of celestial charades, one must first understand the culture from which the communication originates. I have been privileged to experience vivid glimpses of what I can only deduce to be the heavenly realm. It is an infinite space that well exceeds the stereotype of cherubs languishing on clouds. Instead, the heaven I have perceived is quite the busy place with unlimited possibilities to feed one's mind and educate one's soul. Thus, we do not lose our identity as we advance to a new way of being. In soul form, we retain the wisdom of earthly lessons learned, as well as the best aspects of our personhood. This transition holds promise for becoming an improved version of our old self. In short, I believe wholeheartedly that our consciousness outlives our physical form. You don't need a body to exist. Rest assured, you will still be you. It's fascinating to reflect on the traits that distinguish us from one another. Our fingerprints, birthmarks, genetics, and facial characteristics may be wholly unique. Modern science gives credence to our individuality as spiritual beings having a human experience. The discovery of DNA has expanded the universe of human distinction, as if to underscore the intelligence of our design. The same may be said for the composition of our very soul. It may be likened to the invisible equivalent of musical DNA. We are each assigned a note or vibration on a musical scale. Each of us is entitled to the space we occupy on that scale. Though the composition is dynamic as we each evolve, it would be incomplete in our absence. Not only is our soul energy unique, it is also indestructible and indistinguishable. Most interesting to understand is that the universe is not static. It is dynamic and imperfect. The universe is in a state of constant evolution because every motion, every experience, and every way of being contributes to its edification, including your own soul's contributions. As you listen to this, the universe is expanding to accommodate tomorrow's thoughts and actions. There exists a perpetual cycle of shifting energy, in and out, coming and going. Ever notice that newborns and the elderly require extensive amounts of sleep? Both babies and elders are in transition mode. The former group is acclimating to this new world, and the latter group is preparing to return to the heavenly realm. This is not to suggest that the gap in between is vacant or absent of communicative connection. When anyone on earth mentions or reminisces about a lost loved one, the emotion of the thought gets transmitted directly to the soul energy of the dearly departed. Think of it like this. When you post an old photo on Facebook and mention a friend who appears in the picture, there's the option to create a link that notifies him or her of your post. Once apprised of the link, the friend has the option to comment or react in order to acknowledge their awareness and strengthen the memory. When this scenario occurs spiritually, the loved one's soul energy also has the choice to comment if it is deemed timely and appropriate, although it may occur when least expected. How the comment gets communicated is the basis for this book. In my work as a psychic medium, the most frequent question I am asked about a deceased loved one is, are they at peace? My first reaction to those mourning is encouragement to rely upon their own faith or reassurance that it is so. Clients also tend to feel worried that the loved one harbors resentment or disdain. There may be anxious concern about dissatisfaction with the memorial service or the dispersal of personal property. I can state unequivocally that these matters are of absolutely no concern to spirit. On the matter of property dispersal, a woman's deceased husband once communicated through me in no uncertain terms, "I don't give a fuck what you do with my shit." I was greatly relieved when she laughed and cried and explained that such a sentiment was, putting it mildly, coming from him. Do you recall the first time you returned to your childhood neighborhood as an adult and were struck by how small everything appeared? Our soul evolves similarly in the way we all outgrew clothing as our body changed and matured. If our loved ones have transitioned successfully, they now possess 360-degree vision. They have shed old ways of thinking and see clearly the grand scheme of the bigger picture. From their vantage point, they have released human holes and are granted unfettered perspective. It is like the satisfaction of finally completing a picturesque jigsaw puzzle. Any disconnected fragments now make total sense. Oftentimes, this knowledge is born of a consciousness accrued over many life cycles. I can't say that we all most definitely live successive lives, as much as we are blessed with free will in human form. I strongly suspect that reincarnation is a highly personalized decision. However, I can't believe that the infant surviving only several hours after its birth is allotted such a restricted opportunity to know our world. Nor do I believe that human souls come back as creatures less than human, such as a cat. It doesn't seem rational to me that someone who has gotten so far as being human would regress to an animal form, but I could always be wrong. Some people require more process time to become acclimated to living in human form. They are called late bloomers. They may be free spirits that march to the beat of a different drummer, shunning social conventions and manifesting brilliance in myriad forms. These individuals are better accustomed to existing as other beings in other worlds or operating on a level more conducive to the heavenly realm. Young souls tend to behave in ways that are narcissistic and reckless. These are often people who are greedy and manipulative. Young souls tend to be repeat offenders, making identical mistakes via variations on a theme, such as being incarcerated for the same infractions. They haven't yet learned to divorce themselves from the temptations of ego and are essentially the adolescents of the spirit world. I have seen that young souls in heaven require especial patience from their teachers. They are given role-playing exercises in an effort to educate them about altruism and sacrifice. Anyone on the earth plane who openly proclaims to be an old soul is in fact a very young soul that has yet to understand humility. Old souls are those who sign up for struggles and challenging existences. They are often found in abusive, stifling, and oppressive environments and may have impoverished and short-term lives. But being in the world serves a purpose, as their early demise often contributes to raising awareness or remediating issues that affect many on a global scale. A very old soul may be the person with Down syndrome who has limited speech ability but smiles at everyone he greets. The gay teen whose suicide affects his community at large, or the ill baby born into squalor with poor access to resources. I once saw a news segment on television that featured the medical trials of a young family's young daughter. She was born with significant physical health issues, including pronounced facial deformities. My first thought was that she was an old soul and that before incarnating, she struck a deal to take on a very difficult life, but only if she had parents that absolutely adored her, which they did. A very old soul understands the beauty of sacrifice for the beneficial ripple effect it causes. So what is heaven really like? I think there is a consistent structure and a fundamental order about which personal perception may grant a measure of flexibility. This stems from how we were raised, what we were taught to accept, and any adjustments we made as we matured. If you've long held the belief that you arrive at the pearly gates or you stand before your maker awaiting your spiritual scores, you will likely experience it in some semblance. Likewise, if you believe in a vengeful, wrathful, and punitive creator, you may find your beliefs challenged. If the credo of one's spiritual belief system is live to love and harm none, then it stands to reason that there is room for countless variations in perception. One example, one core principle for those who believe, is that when we die, we go to heaven. But how we get there may widely vary from person to person. It may be that a loved one in spirit arrives to escort us there. Or it may be that we go it alone as we travel down the proverbial tunnel of light. Some of us may be old hats at the transition process, knowing exactly where to go, like a little minnow instinctively making its way downstream. Others may be uncertain or disoriented, requiring a more mindful transition. In this case, a loving spiritual presence may gently persuade the newly returning soul to come along by safely escorting them to the other side. Another essential belief about heaven is that we are instantly reunited with our loved ones, perhaps even our pets. This can also occur courtesy of our personal filter. On a number of occasions in my meditations, dreams, and psychic work, I have seen an intermediary environment. This is an in-between place, bridging our world and the next, being on the outskirts of heaven. Here, there is a great meadow sprinkled with wildflowers, vibrant with perpetual springtime. The climate is warm, sunny, and comfortable. One's senses are heightened beyond anything we have experienced on Earth. It is like breathing fully after being congested by a cold, or seeing clearly after the fog lifts from a steamy bathroom mirror. On the occasion I fortuitously gained a glimpse of this place, I vividly recall feeling as one with a waterfall just by observing it with admiration. I was joyful for the exhilaration I experienced as my essence danced with the cascading water. I have come to understand that other intuitive individuals are also aware of this environment. It is commonly called summer land. Its function serves as a gentle way to gradually acclimate an incoming soul to the transition process in a relatable setting. We have spent our lifetimes in human form, so it seems only natural that for some there is a reverse process to reacquaint returning to soul energy. After all, who could resist such a scenic vista with a forest of evergreens just beyond the meadow and the fragrant scent of pine in the air? I have seen people's dogs come bounding across the field to greet them, sometimes followed by one or two loved ones. So ecstatic is the reunion that it only makes sense to continue the journey across the meadow without hesitancy or regret. Elsewhere, in hospice settings, I have seen deceased loved ones slowly make their presence known to an individual preparing to transition. An alternate reality may crystallize in a new normal as the individual speaks directly to their deceased loved ones in the days or hours prior to their passing. It is a loving and compassionate accommodation that serves to soothe and comfort the individual. They may speak of readying to catch the train or taxi, and may seem relaxed, contented, and peaceful. The visiting spirits appear in an instantly recognizable form, though they look much younger. Once the transition to heaven is complete and the incoming soul becomes reacquainted, it is no longer necessary for a soul to project itself as human in appearance. Therefore, recognition is discerned by the uniqueness of one's vibrational frequency, as was previously described. No one's identity is at risk of loss. It is every bit as familiar as recalling someone's face. It is also generally agreed that we each have the chance to reflect on our human existence upon our arrival in heaven. This is called a life review. But how this occurs may be individualized, as documented by researchers of life between lives. Some people report undergoing their life review privately, or in the presence of one or more spiritual allies. Others tell of viewing selections from their life simultaneously, or separately, on movie screens. Some may be able to pause, fast forward, or rewind these scenes, whereas others can manipulate the imagery to watch multiple variations on a theme, such as experiencing a momentous event from another's point of view. No matter the means, the outcome is intended to be efficacious and edifying, not humiliating or punitive. The return to our origins coincides with a reunion of soulmates. A soulmate appears in our life in human form to support our purpose and advancement. This is a pact of predestiny made prior to birth. We tend to think of soulmates in a purely romantic sense. Our core chemistry may feel interconnected with that of a partner or spouse. We may spontaneously laugh at the same thing or know what the other is thinking before it is spoken. We may feel as though we have known one another much longer than possible. And that person may indeed be a soulmate, but the soulmate association can extend well beyond its traditionally romantic connotations. In fact, we can have more than one soulmate. A soulmate could be your sibling, your next-door neighbor, or a parent. Closely bonded friendships have coined the phrase brother from another mother, though both persons are biologically unrelated. Think about old married couples and even some siblings that have spent their entire lives together and die days or even hours apart, sometimes in separate locations. Consider that in 2016, actress Debbie Reynolds passed away within 24 hours after her daughter, Carrie Fisher. I strongly suspect that we can have a history of previous lifetimes with a soulmate. I recall a psychic consultation with a client who couldn't seem to release an old boyfriend, even though she was in another relationship. I saw that, in a previous life, she was the old boyfriend's mother, and he was her eldest son. He enlisted in World War II and was killed shortly thereafter. Thus, her inability to get over him in real time is fueled by guilt and grief that has seeped over from the prior era. Curiously, she affirmed that her old boyfriend was a huge war buff, and he has compared her to his mother. Your soulmate could also be your worst enemy. It's all about the intent gleaned from one to another in the relationship. I was bullied throughout my school career, especially by one boy in particular. He made life miserable to the point where I became suicidal. For reasons that still remain a mystery to me, he tortured me on a daily basis for many years. Decades afterward, I had a significant dream in which I was in a classroom as an adult. My bully was there too, except he wasn't much older than I remembered him. I observed that his mother was cold, harsh, and inattentive, and I realized he must have felt he had good reasons for tormenting me. I was able to finally make peace with the situation. So, although I have forgiven him, I have also reconciled the probability of a soulmate dynamic between us. As a psychic medium, I am often asked if we reconnect with deceased pets on the other side. I can only respond by relating what I have been shown in my meditations and through my private readings. When we lose a pet as children, our family may console us by saying, "He's in doggy heaven now." Curiously, this aligns with my personal visions about dogs, cats, birds, horses, reptiles, and a wide variety of other beloved creatures. That is, at the moment of physical death, their energy transmutes into soul form. Yes, they possess souls, and transitions to the heavenly realm. Same as us. But what I have also been shown is that there's not a lot of commingling in heaven between human souls and animal souls. I think we can reunite if we wish in order to re-experience the emotion and affection associated with a pet, pet-owner relationship. But I think, as a general rule, doggy heaven means just that, a separate domain for animal energy. Take heart, however, if you are an avid animal devotee. I have also been shown human souls serving as shepherds and gatekeepers of that animal domain. The interesting thing about animals, I have learned, is that they do not think in terms of the finality between life and death. They think in terms of an ongoing cycle of evolution. In essence, they understand the big picture better than most people. They are grounded in a perpetual meditation for existing in silence and are readily connected to the source. On several occasions, dogs have told me they were dying well before their owners knew. This was communicated telepathically in a way I would understand. They showed me a gorgeous orange and coral-hued sky with a gradually setting sun. This visual informed me that they were aware their time in physical form was limited and that they were preparing to transition in a slow fade-out. Their comprehension of how the universe operates granted them great insight. This is why a dog that is in pain and dying, or is about to be put down, will look up at us with those big brown eyes and wag its tail. He already knows where he's going, and is more concerned with comforting us. Deciding to have a pet euthanized can be an agonizing decision. But of all the dog and cat souls I've connected with, not one has ever been in disagreement with his owner's decision. I can only surmise that the same holds true for other living creatures, great and small. It is no coincidence that the infrastructure of our academic and governmental institutions is inspired by templates originating in heaven. There are tiers of authority, planes of evolution, and councils of elders, or patient, highly evolved souls. In the grand scheme of the universe, we are all on a learning curve toward enlightenment. Some of us are preparing to enter college, whereas others are held back to repeat the second grade. In fact, many times I have visited what appears to be an expansive university campus. All the architecture is bathed in the hue of golden light. Here I have glimpsed the goings-on as I pass by the buildings. The walls are translucent, and at first I was unsure of what I was seeing, classroom groups of what looked like frog or fish eggs. It took me some time to figure out that the eggs were souls, represented in a way I would recognize. Sometimes these soul clusters make up a home team of personalities familiar to us. Though the outward physical identities of each alter with various incarnations, there is no mistaking one from the other given the musical note of our soul vibration. I have observed the learning opportunities in which these clusters partake, sometimes in their classrooms, under the supervision of an elder guide or teacher. Earth is the grand soap opera, and in heavenly classrooms, there are chances to role-play human dramas. Different scenarios are experienced on the order of coulda, woulda, shoulda, and good, better, and best choices. During these role-play efforts, souls swap places, assuming opposite genders and personalities for purposes of perspective-taking exercises. Soul awareness of another is like wrapping someone else's blanket around you and instantly knowing everything about him or her. Similarly, I once saw a realm of purple, transparent bubbles. Contained within each was a movie scene all its own. The dynamic of each scene could be manipulated by adding other bubbles, which attached like the twin soap bubbles we blew as kids. One scene showed a couple having a bitter spat, but their energy shifted with the addition of a baby bubble. Now they were conscious of not waking the baby. Their newborn became a focal point that dissipated the argument and refocused their attention in a positive respect. There were endless additions and fascinating combinations to be formed. Other learning opportunities may occur in a vast library of archives. I later learned that, among others, Edgar Cayce, the famed mystic seer, also told of this hall of records. It has shown itself to me as a massive golden circular structure comprised of bookshelves that extends upward as far as the eye can see. It is here that one can, in
Sample complete. Ready to continue?